Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, April 18th, 2021. I'm reading the articles on Thursday, April 22nd, and we'll begin with the most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for April. Tom Green County, as of April 21st, City of San Angelo, 16,710 positive cases reported, 4 new positive tests, deaths 307, 198 from Tom Green County and 109 from other counties, 7 currently hospitalized, 59 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker, 25% of people fully vaccinated, by Chastity Lasky. Tom Green County has administered more than 64,474 doses of COVID-19 vaccine as of April 20th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 7% from the previous week's tally of 60,308 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 25% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of April 20th. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention considers someone fully vaccinated 2 weeks after they've been given a single shot, Johnson & Johnson, or a second shot, either Pfizer or Moderna. Deputies say struggle for knife in argument leads to San Angelo woman's arrest, by Elena Edgen, published April 22nd. A San Angelo woman has been arrested after a man was bleeding heavily from knife wounds, according to an arrest affidavit obtained Wednesday. On Tuesday, April 20th, a Tom Green County Sheriff's Office deputy responded to a domestic disturbance in the 3300 block of Fruitland Farm Court. A couple had an argument which resulted in an injury, records state. The woman left the area of the argument and returned wielding a knife. She approached the man while brandishing the knife, according to the affidavit. The man attempted to take the knife from her, which caused 2 lacerations to his left hand, which bled heavily, records state. Courtney Shea Eubank, 37, was arrested Tuesday on suspicion of aggravated assault of a date, family, household member with a weapon. She remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $50,000 bond as of 11:13 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Police say woman stabbed person with scissors 7 times at San Angelo Living Center, by Elena Edgen, published April 22nd. A woman has been arrested after another woman was hospitalized with multiple stab wounds at the San Angelo State-Supported Living Center, according to an arrest affidavit obtained Wednesday. On April 10, 2021, Tom Green County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to a stabbing at 11640 North U.S. Highway 87 in Carlsbad. They discovered a woman being treated for multiple stab wounds to her leg, arm, and back, according to the affidavit. 3 employees with the center wrote statements for the deputies. 2 stated they saw the suspect with scissors in her hand attack another woman. 1 heard the suspect say, "I'll kill you," expletive, before stabbing the woman in the back, record state. The woman's pants were soaked with blood and blood pooled on the floor, according to the employees. Deputies noted the woman had 3 puncture wounds to the left leg, 3 to the left arm, and 1 in the back, according to the affidavit. Veronica Perez, 32, was arrested Wednesday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. She remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $30,000 bond as of 11:15 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Perez finished a pretrial intervention program, which was approved to be dismissed last year for assault of a public servant in 2017 when she hit a center employee with a lanyard with metal locks, according to court documents. What's that noise? San Angelo's Fort Concho to have days of gunfire during competition, by Elena Edgen, published April 22nd. People living near San Angelo's Fort Concho should be prepared for the next few days, as a competition will bring the sounds of gunfire to the area, according to an advisory given Wednesday. From Thursday, April 22nd through Saturday, April 24th, pistols and carbine firing sounds will be heard from Fort Concho during the regional cavalry competition. The blank fire will go off throughout the days of the competition, so a noise advisory has been issued. The competition will have competitors from several states who will participate in courses and events on the parade ground. Competitions include pistol, military horsemanship, and combat. Events will take place from 9 a.m. to noon and 1 to 4 p.m. People are welcome to bring their own chairs and watch the events, which are free to attend. For a schedule of events, visit fortconcho.com. What's the most important issue in San Angelo that City Council can fix? Candidates Respond, by John Tufts, published April 21st. The Standard Times sent a questionnaire to all candidates running for San Angelo City Council. The positions for mayor and single-member districts 2, 4, and 6 are up for election. Voters will decide who will represent them on May 1, 2021. The 10 candidates in this year's election represent a diverse mix from San Angelo's community, with 6 women and 4 men seeking office. Some have been involved in city politics for years. Others, like 19-year-old C. Rangel, are political newcomers. Each position will be filled with elected officials serving 4-year terms. Responses not appearing below include those from Lucy Gonzalez, who is running unopposed for single-member District 4. Gonzalez did not respond to requests for participation in the annual election guide for San Angelo voters. Candidates were given 9 questions and asked to keep their responses brief and limited to 3 to 4 sentences. Some responses have been edited for clarity and length. Their answers are listed below in the order of their names and how they will appear on the May 1st ballot. What do you think is the top issue facing people in the district you want to represent for San Angelo? Mayor Dietrich Tillis. To me, the top priority is fixing the potholes in our city. As I've been on the campaign trail and visited several different communities, the one consistent issue that everyone agrees on is the condition of the roads in San Angelo. The infrastructure in the city is literally crumbling. I want to create a safe streets initiative to address potholes in the city. Brenda Gunter. The city's main function is to provide for the infrastructure and the public safety of the citizens of San Angelo. We must continue to invest back into the infrastructure of the city, and that means into the reconstruction, repair, and maintenance of our city's streets. It also means the city must continue to repair and replace old water and sewer lines. Not only is it a primary function of the city, but it also remains a great need due to many years of the city not having a plan in place to reinvest in the repair and maintenance of all city streets, water, and sewer lines. Silvara Lawson. I believe the top issue facing the people in San Angelo is access to well-paying jobs. We need to keep the talent in our city, and the best way to do this is through encouraging businesses to invest in San Angelo and to diversify the job market. The Chamber of Commerce has already done a lot to improve this, and I would continue to support these efforts for the people. Single-member District 2, Mercedes de la Cruz. A major issue facing San Angelo is water resources. My plan is to install new smart meters paid for by implementing a time-of-use water system. Citizens that choose to use excessive amounts of water at these times will be charged an additional fee. The money earned will help fund much-needed water repairs. Cy Rangel. I feel as though the biggest issue facing District 2 is that the people of that area feel unheard. Many of the citizens have expressed how they feel left out because the area seems to be neglected. I hope to be able to better understand the needs of the area by getting to know its constituents. Tom Thompson. Infrastructure, streets and water distribution. The city is approaching $70 million on street expenditures in the past 4 years, and it is just the beginning of what we need. The good news for SMD2 is the North Chadbourne preparation that has already begun and should run up to 43rd Street. My position is streets and infrastructure should remain the primary concern for all budgeting opportunities. Single-member District 6, Larry Miller. Our impassable roads are completely unacceptable. This not only affects our citizens driving the streets daily, but is guaranteed to seriously impact San Angelo's future economic growth. James Irvin. I'm sure everyone will say the same issue. Roads, roads, roads. Yes, big things take time, but they shouldn't take this long and shouldn't be trying to do a large number of them, at least according to what the council is claiming to project now. If they were consistently maintained, entire streets wouldn't look like a bomb range. It disrupts businesses, destroys cars, and angers people, and that's just no good. Billy DeWitt. I am getting feedback from residents in District 6 relative to the growth and development in the district and the resultant traffic congestion that it is causing has become an issue. Important election dates in San Angelo. Tuesday, April 27th, last day of early voting by personal appearance. Saturday, May 1st, Election Day, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. San Angelo's Icon Cinema robbed at gunpoint. Law enforcement arrests one after pursuit by Elena Edgen and John Tufts, published April 21st. Police are investigating an armed robbery that took place at San Angelo's Icon Cinema late Wednesday afternoon and ended near Sterling City after a nearly 30-minute car chase. A spokesperson for the police department said no one was injured during the robbery. Just before 5 p.m. Wednesday, April 21st, police scanner traffic reported a man in a pickup with possibly an automatic rifle. Police attempted a traffic stop on Bryant Boulevard, but the driver continued to flee. A pursuit ensued, which led state troopers, sheriff's deputies, and police on U.S. Highway 87 toward Sterling City. An officer in the pursuit noted the driver may have had a shotgun and a long gun, according to scanner traffic. Law enforcement deployed spike strips, which the vehicle drove over, toward the county line. The vehicle's tires were smoking as it started to stop. An officer on the scanner reported they had a suspect in custody by 5:23 p.m. Police have not yet released the identity of the armed suspect or details about the robbery. By 5:30 p.m., at least seven police units were seen at Icon Cinema, 2020 North Bryant Boulevard, which had briefly reopened for interviews on Monday and Tuesday. The theater has been closed since March 20th, 2020, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. This is a developing news story. Police said more information will be provided later. Plans for College Hill's water bottling plant go down the drain after zoning change denial, by John Tufts, published April 21st. Brooks Murphy called rumors and concerns his proposed water bottling business would be bad for College Hill's neighborhood malarkey. "That's the best word I can use to describe it," the Odessa businessman said. "I just don't see how a maximum of eight people is ever going to cause the noise and traffic expressed by some San Angelo residents." Murphy spoke during a city council meeting Tuesday, April 20th, urging elected officials to support a zoning change request in the 2900 block of A&M Avenue. If passed, Murphy planned to turn the gymnasium behind the now-vacant William B. Travis Elementary School building into a water processing and delivery business. San Angelo's municipal water would be filtered through an RO system, bottled inside the former gymnasium, then delivered to customers in one-ton diesel pickups. During the last city council meeting, April 6th, members of city staff recommended council not approve the zoning change. "We believe that the commercial use within the middle of the neighborhood is a little bit too intense for that area," said John James, Director of Planning and Development Services. In an agreement with James was College Hills resident Flo Loika, who said the water bottling plant was inappropriate for the neighborhood. She feared it would add unwanted noise and traffic and lower property values for dozens of residents. "There's plenty of commercial businesses around town," Loika said. The owner needs to take the business and go somewhere else. Murphy didn't appear keen on doing so. This building is a great location for us simply because it's in the center of the city, Murphy said Tuesday. It's bigger than what we would ever use. We're not interested in being a billion-dollar company. He told city council members the water bottling plant would hire between 4 to 8 people, providing college kids jobs, local people jobs as managers, and having 2 to 3 one-ton trucks with small trailers. In addition to other concerns, Murphy addressed the volume of noise his business might add to the neighborhood, something Loika and other College Hills residents were worried about. Our equipment operates at less than 85 decibels. I'm not sure if you're familiar with decibels or sound levels. I would venture to say right now I'm talking at about 85 decibels with the echo in here, Murphy said into a microphone. Volume will never be an issue, he said. It wasn't immediately clear during the meeting if the sound of the water bottling equipment had been measured from inside or outside the building. The Standard Times reached out to someone tied with the project for clarification Tuesday, but received no response. The average decibel level of normal conversation is 60 decibels, with the sound of a gas-powered lawnmower and a leaf blower at 80 to 85 decibels, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Noise above 70 decibels over a prolonged period of time may start to damage your hearing. The risk of damaging your hearing from noise increases with the sound intensity, not the loudness of the sound, a statement from the CDC reads in regards to hearing loss. Murphy pointed out the water bottling plant would be located near Angelo Catholic School at 2315 South A&M Avenue, situated about a block away from the gymnasium at Travis Elementary. Angelo Catholic School has about 100 students enrolled, all of whom are picked up and dropped off by their parents. The school does not provide bus services, according to its website. To Murphy, the level of traffic from the bottling plant was nothing any different than residents themselves, literally across the street, were already using and driving daily, he said. The point that the business would be directly across the street from residents, however, seemed to concern several members of city council. San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter told Murphy that while she was a big supporter of business development, she was also very protective of neighborhoods. I believe when we start allowing commercial development within a neighborhood, then we start to deteriorate what we traditionally call neighborhoods, Gunter said. She told Murphy she wanted him to have a successful business, but advised him to perhaps look for alternative locations. District 3 City Council person Harry Thomas appeared to agree with Gunter. Most of you know that I'm very pro-business, Thomas said. Having said that, operating a commercial business in the middle of a neighborhood is not something that I want to do. We've got plenty of land in this community, plenty of area in this community that need businesses. Thomas recommended space for the proposed water bottling plant be found elsewhere, a point which District 4 councilperson Lucy Gonzalez shared. There's somewhere in the city that this business can go besides in that neighborhood, Gonzalez said. District 3 councilperson Lane Carter, who represents the College Hills area, said he and other elected officials strongly favored local businesses to open in San Angelo, but didn't support granting the zoning change request. Carter made a motion for denial, which Hebert seconded. City Council voted to deny the measure 6-1, with District 2 councilperson Tom Thompson opposing denial. New Mexican food restaurant opens in San Angelo, by Rosanna Frere, published April 21st. A new Mexican food restaurant has opened in San Angelo by a man who closed a gaming store in 2019. Silvestre Morales was the owner of Retro Game Press, 123 West 1st Street, that closed November 17, 2019. Morales and his wife have now opened Antonito's Mi Tierra at 2102 North Howard Street. The building used to be home to Italian restaurant Via Palma, which has since moved to 3020 North Chadburn Street. Morales opened on April 21st for to-go orders and cash only until Thursday, April 29th. We are waiting for the computer system, soda machine, and some other things, Morales said. We decided to open since we already had the food and didn't want it to go to waste. So now we can make money and buy more food. The restaurant serves fruit cups, Mexican corn, hamburgers, hot dogs, nachos, russas, and more. Starting Friday, April 23rd, the restaurant will also serve menudo, tamales, and barbacoa. Beginning Friday, April 30th, the restaurant will have indoor seating. A drive-through window will accept credit card payments. The restaurant is open every day except Wednesday from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. for main food items, such as burritos and breakfast, and snacks will be served from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Morales said they need Wednesdays off to get food ingredients since they are from Mexico. "We have the real white corn from Mexico, and our fruit is from there, too," he said. "You can't find it here in San Angelo." Morales said he wants to bring the best prices in town to the people of San Angelo. "The prices are too high here for things like corn and burritos," he said. "It's hard to find good food for cheap, so we want to bring that to everyone. We try to make real Mexican food, the best food in San Angelo." Man enters plea deal in San Angelo burglaries, standoff with police, by Elena Edgen, published April 20th. Nearly a year after three robberies and an hours-long standoff with police, one of the two men charged in the case appeared in court Tuesday. About 2 p.m. Tuesday, April 20th, Abelardo Ariola, 22, attended a plea hearing via Zoom in the 119th District Court. Ariola was charged with robbery and two counts of aggravated robbery, which led to a standoff with police in May 2020. He pleaded guilty to the three charges. In exchange for Ariola's guilty pleas, the state recommended 7 years in jail per charge, which would run concurrently. Ariola also has to pay $144.28 of restitution, which will be paid jointly with Jorge Ariola, the co-defendant. 119th District Court Judge Ben Woodward accepted the state's recommendation and sentenced Abelardo Ariola to the recommended terms. He was credited 342 days of confinement. The state of Texas versus Jorge Ariola and Abelardo Ariola. About 4 p.m., May 13, 2020, two men robbed the Smoker's Outlet at 1902 North Chadburn Street. During the robbery, Abelardo Ariola acted as a lookout, while Jorge Ariola entered the store and stole a 30-pack of Budweiser beer, records state. Jorge Ariola began to fight with a female employee, and Abelardo Ariola joined the fight, which left the woman's left arm injured. The men fled a block away from the store to a 20th Street residence. Police arrived at the residence around 4:45 p.m., which sparked a standoff lasting over 4 hours. An investigation revealed two additional robberies between 4 and 8 a.m. that morning at a Stripes convenience store, 1821 North Bryant Boulevard, and a 7-Eleven convenience store at 2202 North Chadburn Street. No employees were injured during these robberies, but money was taken from the cash register in both cases, according to police. A weapon was involved. Police arrested Jorge Sleepy Ariola and Abelardo Ariola on suspicion of one count of aggravated robbery and one count of robbery each. Jorge Ariola also had a charge of fugitive from justice from Washington County in Texas. On July 8, 2020, an indictment charged Jorge Sleepy Ariola with one count of aggravated robbery and robbery. The charges were enhanced to habitual offender due to prior convictions. In 2011 and 2007, Jorge Ariola was convicted of assault, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon in Tom Green County. An indictment charged Abelardo Ariola on two counts of aggravated robbery and one count of robbery. In the charges, a woman was shoved and two more were threatened with a knife, according to the indictments. San Angelo City Council approves purchase of newspaper building for possible police station, by Paul Harris, published April 20th. The San Angelo City Council approved a measure Tuesday to allow City Manager Daniel Valenzuela to enter negotiations for purchasing the Standard Times building. The measure passed unanimously 7-0 for an amount not to exceed $950,000. The building has been on the market for about a year. San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter said the city is exploring options to turn the building into a possible site for a new police station. "We are excited about the opportunity that purchasing the Standard Times building presents to the city," Gunter said. "We have known for a long time that our police department has needed a new building." Gunter said the police department's current facilities were not in great shape, and the city could move some police resources to the Standard Times building. "This is an opportunity for us to get a new police station for police officers," Gunter said. The news of the sale, which has not been finalized, was announced during a city council meeting on Tuesday, April 20th. What about the Standard Times news team? The Standard Times has existed at various locations in San Angelo since its first newspaper was printed in 1884. The newspaper staff has operated out of its current location at 34 West Harris Avenue since 1951. The Standard Times news team is, and will remain, based in the community. A search for a new building to call home and to write and report the news in San Angelo is underway. This story will be updated. Reporter John Tufts contributed to this story. San Angelo ISD sets date for new mask policy. Shifts to masks appreciated, not required. By John Tufts, published April 19th. Nearly a year after requiring students to wear masks on San Angelo ISD campuses, school district officials announced they were easing restrictions because of fewer positive cases of COVID-19 in the community. Beginning June 1, 2021, San Angelo Independent School District will transition to a masks are appreciated, not required policy. The new safety protocols will take effect for the summer and the beginning of the 2021-22 school year. "Obviously, we will continue to monitor and base our information on current conditions," Superintendent Carl Detloff said. Detloff spoke to officials during a public school board meeting on Monday, April 19th. He credited masks with keeping students safe, as well as helping limit the number of students and staff needing to be quarantined throughout the year. "I believe it is my chief responsibility, along with our board of trustees, to keep the doors of the classroom open for learning. To do that, we need kids in school," Detloff said. District officials first announced in July 2020 students aged 10 and older would be required to wear masks when social distancing wasn't possible, and ordered 130,000 masks for students who needed them. Detloff said the district would buckle down for 6 more weeks. Then on June 1st, the wearing of masks will be appreciated but not required at SAISD. Man charged in 1980s San Angelo cold case gets $450,000 bond reduced after 2 years in prison. By Elena Edgen, published April 19th. A daughter's plea to have her father's bond reduced after 2 years reached the ears of a San Angelo judge on Monday, April 19th. The woman's father, 63-year-old Adolph Gonzalez, has been in jail awaiting a trial in a 1980s cold case for more than 2 years. After hearing arguments that Gonzalez, who sat in a wheelchair during the Friday hearing, was physically disabled and little threat to the community, 51st District Court Judge Carmen Dusek took the weekend to review evidence. About 1:10 p.m., Monday, April 19th, Dusek announced her decision. "While he is charged with a very serious offense, his present physical condition reduced the concern that he is a danger to the public," Dusek said. "Mr. Gonzalez, I'm giving you the opportunity to not be in jail." Dusek lowered Gonzalez's bond from $450,000 to $100,000 Monday. Conditions on the bond, if he is released, include that he must wear a GPS ankle monitor and can only leave the residence for court, health, or government appointments. San Angelo mayoral candidate regrets controversial social media exchange, stands by spouse, by John Tufts, published April 19th. A San Angelo mayoral candidate has been swept into a social media firestorm after she appeared to dismiss a woman who complained the candidate's husband harassed her online. Since Thursday, April 15th, 2021, the social media post detailing the controversial exchange has been shared on Facebook 932 times as of 1 p.m. Monday, April 19th. The Standard Times reached out to candidate Silvara Lawson over the course of several days for an interview, who on Monday, April 19th, said she regretted how the incident was handled. "My husband let his temper get the best of him," Lawson said. "He was wrong for what he said, and he deeply regrets it. I didn't word my response to her correctly, and I regret that." With roughly 2 weeks to go before city council elections, hundreds of social media users over the weekend expressed scorn and outrage toward Lawson after controversial private messages surfaced between her and another woman on Facebook. A message written by Lawson appeared to show her dismissing complaints a woman made after she received a profanity-laden message from Dustin Lawson, who told the woman to slit her wrists. Lawson has told the public she stands by her husband. On her personal Facebook page, which Lawson said she has had to make private because of what she described as online bullying, Lawson wrote, "Everyone has skeletons in their own closet. However, this was an incident that was handled appropriately and privately months ago. All apologies were made. I stand by my husband, but I do not condone his actions or his words of choice." Controversial exchange may have been triggered after social media post about masks. The exchange happened 6 months ago. In November 2020, Dustin Lawson sent a woman a private Facebook message suggesting she kill herself. That message may have been triggered because of a social media post concerning the wearing of masks inside businesses to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The post was made by someone who had both me and Dustin on their Facebook friends list, and I have never spoken to Dustin before, the woman stated. The Standard Times has chosen not to name the woman after she expressed concerns of retaliation. Dustin commented critically about the mask mandate and compared it to having his personal rights and freedoms as an American stripped away. "I thought this was an over-the-top comment, so I laugh-reacted to it," the woman stated. The Standard Times has not been able to verify the content of the original Facebook post. In his message, Dustin believed the woman had reported him to Facebook for violating one of its social media policies. His message was loaded with profanity and riddled with abusive, derogatory language toward women. At one point, he calls the woman a vulgar slang for female genitalia. The message reads as follows: "You're a stupid expletive. How's that? Gotta report me, huh? What an expletive. Slit your wrists, you worthless piece of expletive. Oh yeah, you're not ugly. You're fugly. Expletive. Trash. Expletive. Go expletive yourself, idiot." The woman told Dustin she hadn't reported him to Facebook, but would report him for the message. She then contacted Silvara Lawson. "I laugh reacted to a Facebook comment, and now your husband is harassing me online," she wrote. Lawson responded by saying her husband was awesome. "My husband is bad expletive and an awesome individual. Just leave it alone. Have a wonderful night," Lawson wrote. "I should have responded better," Lawson said Monday. "I should have wrote something longer, saying he was an amazing individual, but that I was sorry he lost his temper. We're not these monsters that everyone's been trying to portray us to be," Lawson said. "He's a great husband and father, but what he said was wrong." In a message to the Standard Times, the woman stated she posted images of the exchanges with the Lawsons on Facebook in November, then began receiving harassing messages from people associated with Dustin. She deleted the post. Lawson defends husband and character. Since Thursday of last week, Lawson has defended her character and her husband on both her personal Facebook page and her official candidate page after social media users began blanketing both with images of the controversial exchange, demanding Lawson apologize. Lawson has stated on social media that apologies were made by both her and her husband months ago, and furthermore, were accepted. According to the woman, Lawson's statement might not have been entirely true. Her husband Dustin technically did say he was sorry for telling me to kill myself, but his apology was filled with further insults, the woman stated in a message to the Standard Times. Dustin's message containing the apology in its entirety reads as follows. It's not a joke. You expletive kids keep thinking everything is a joke. Wait until all your rights are stripped and then make your stupid expletive jokes. I apologize for telling you to kill yourself, but you people get me frustrated as expletive. Someone reported me, banned me from commenting for 3 days for saying you were being ugly. Dustin inserted a laughing emoji face. Can't you see who the internet is biased against? Sad, expletive world we're living in. No apology for the pejorative language is mentioned. In her reply to Dustin, the woman makes no mention of accepting his apology. She tells him, dude, you literally told me to slit my wrists, and I did nothing to you. Please seek anger management. Goodbye. And Dustin responds by sending her an emoji of a middle finger. The woman blocked Dustin on Facebook and stated she hasn't heard from him since November. She also stated Lawson blocked her on Facebook as well shortly after the one message exchange. City of San Angelo has no social media policy for elected officials or candidates. Election records show Lawson filed her mayoral candidacy on January 15th, roughly 2 months after the incident. On the seventh page of her candidate packet, Lawson signed the Code of Fair Campaign Practices, listing a set of policies about the basic principles of decency, honesty, and fair play that every candidate and political committee in this state has a moral obligation to observe. There are seven guidelines of behavior listed in the code, none of which cover the conduct of spouses on social media or social media conduct of the candidate prior to running for office. Lawson has also broken no social media requirements of the city of San Angelo, of which there are none, for political candidates or their spouses. A spokesperson for the city of San Angelo on Friday, April 16th, said no social media policy by the city is enforced for elected officials or their spouses or for candidates seeking office. Candidate says she's being cyberbullied. Following an interview with the Standard Times, Lawson unblocked the woman and sent her an apology, which reads in part, you had messaged me back in November about my husband's terrible choice of words that was used towards you. I should have apologized then for his words, but I didn't, and I am so sorry, Lawson wrote. You definitely did not deserve it. This isn't a push for my campaign. This is a woman reaching out to you who has been attacked by people saying things just as nasty as what he said. Since going viral, Lawson said she's been forced to make her social media accounts private after a flurry of negative comments, some of which the candidate says have verged into cyberbullying. I lost a child in February of last year, Lawson said. Someone brought that up. I know I'm running for political office, but that's no excuse. Two wrongs don't make a right. After receiving Lawson's apology, the woman responded by calling it disingenuous and requested Lawson not contact her again. In a Facebook comment Lawson made on her official candidate page, she stated, "To those of you posting the reminders of something I regret, thank you for reminding me that I'm not perfect. None of us are. More importantly, if you feel that passionately about the issue, come out on May 1st and vote. There are three candidates to pick from." Police say San Angelo man chokes wife, points gun at her head over suspected affair. By Elena Edgen, published April 19th. A San Angelo man has been indicted months after a woman was choked and threatened with a gun during an argument over Snapchat, according to an arrest affidavit. On October 19th, 2020, a woman woke up about 3:30 a.m. to her husband demanding that she open her Snapchat account. When she refused, he dragged her out of bed, put his hands around her neck, and started choking her, according to court documents. She told police she couldn't breathe and thought that she was going to pass out. He released her and demanded she unlock her account, which she refused again. The man then pointed a black handgun at her head, records state. Police noted the woman had red marks on her throat and neck consistent with choking. The man told police he thought his wife was cheating, which led to his demands. When she refused, he told the police he did choke her, but denied ever pointing a gun at her, according to the affidavit. Connor Featherston was arrested October 19, 2020, on suspicion of assault on a family member by impeding breath or circulation. He was released on a $20,000 bond the next day, according to online jail records. He returned to Tom Green County Detention Center on Saturday under the indicted charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and assault on a family member by impeding breath or circulation. He was released the following day, according to online jail records. The weapon charge is a second-degree felony punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. The family charge is a third-degree felony punishable by up to 10 years. A court date has been tentatively set for June 2021, according to online court records. 19-year-old injured in San Angelo motel shooting. Police ask for public's help. By Elena Edgen, published April 19th. The San Angelo Police Department has asked for the public's help, finding information about a weekend shooting that injured a 19-year-old, according to a police news release. About 12:30 p.m., Sunday, April 18th, 2021, police responded to the Super 8 Motel located at 410 West Avenue L. They found a man, 19, who had been shot, according to the release. The man was transported to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. No arrests had been made as of Monday morning, according to the release. Anyone with information about the shooting or the suspect or suspects should contact the department's Criminal Investigations Division at 325-657-4264. Anonymous tips can be made at http://bit.ly/sapdtips247 or by texting tip SAPD to 888-777. Could San Angelo's 2021 mayoral race be a runoff? Here's what previous elections tell us. By John Tufts, published April 18th. It sounds familiar. Three candidates filed to become San Angelo's next mayor. Three names appeared on political signs placed along major roadways and intersections, including the yards of residents supporting their bid for office. There was talk of fixing streets, repairing water mains, making people's voices heard in local government, and helping small businesses in San Angelo prosper. In the end, the majority of voters favored Dwayne Morrison to help lead the city as mayor of San Angelo in June 2013. Morrison's victory came down to a tight runoff election against Kendall Hirschfield after narrowly defeating Paul Alexander by 2 percentage points the month before. Both the regular and runoff elections of 2013 had low voter turnout. Records show only 8,060 people, 15.6%, of San Angelo's then more than 51,500 registered voters bothered to cast ballots in May. During the runoff in June, voter turnout dwindled to 12.9%, with 6,335 ballots cast. Morrison won the election by 119 votes. Flash forward to 2021, and San Angelo once again will decide between three mayoral candidates. Incumbent Brenda Gunter, the city's first female elected mayor, has served 4 years in office and is seeking another term. She faces two challengers, Silvara Lawson and Dietrich Tillis. A win for Lawson would make her the second female to hold the office. It would also mark the first time San Angelo had back-to-back female mayors. If Tillis is the victor, he would be San Angelo's first black mayor. He is the city's first black mayoral candidate, according to a spokesperson with San Angelo's local chapter of the NAACP. History will be made if Gunter, Lawson, or Tillis wins the election May 1st. But history could also repeat itself if no candidate earns more than 50% of the vote, triggering a runoff. In the past 8 years, there have been runoffs for city council positions in 2017, 2016, and 2013. Traditionally, participation in local elections has been low, averaging about 13.56% voter turnout in the last three races for mayor. That means very few voters are making decisions for all the other registered voters in the city. With three mayoral candidates in 2021, San Angelo could see another tight race. It's a numbers game, and the numbers are traditionally low. There were 54,829 people registered to vote in the city of San Angelo as of April 14, 2021, according to the elections administrator, Vona Hudson. If voter turnout remains at an average of 13.56%, then San Angelo's next mayor will be decided by roughly 7,435 people. In that scenario, Tillis, Gunter, and Lawson's political fate will hinge on whether they convinced more than 3,718 people to have voted for them by May 1st. If not, the two candidates with the most votes will square off against each other in a runoff. Morrison's victory in 2013 was a surprise to many, including, it seemed, to Morrison himself, who had to walk around in the pasture of his Lakeview home and gather his thoughts after a hard uphill battle of an election. He had beaten Hirschfeld, a candidate Morrison had lost to by 622 votes in May's regular election. During the runoff, his fortunes changed. What fortune has in store for the 2021 mayoral race is anyone's guess, but if historical voting patterns remain the same, the outcome will be decided by a small fraction of the city's registered voters. Gunter is no stranger to a crowded race. In 2017, she emerged the clear winner against three other opponents, beating them all with more than 65% of the ballots cast. Voter turnout was marginal then, too, with 7,286 people, about 13.3% of the city's registered voters, who showed up at the polls. In San Angelo, local elections are a numbers game. The numbers are low, and every vote counts. Overdue. San Angelo's library seeks funds for first renovation since opening in the 1970s. By Elena Edgen and Colin Murphy. Published April 17th. San Angelo's North Branch Library hopes to raise over $1 million to bring the location into the 21st century, according to the Tom Green County Library System. The North Branch Library, 3001 North Chadburn Street, opened in July 1975, and not much has changed since then. With the overdue campaign, the library hopes to raise over $1 million for a complete renovation. Computers are as commonplace as books, yet the library has not evolved its space to accommodate these major advances, according to a San Angelo Area Foundation release. The number of staff has increased, but there is no office space. Public restrooms aren't ADA compliant. The time has come to update and expand the library. The renovation will include new technology, bring it to ADA compliance, and give new life to the decades-old location. Officials did consider relocating, but community input revealed people wanted North Branch to stay in the location. The special project listing on SAAF's website stated the building was cramped and KFW architects have finalized a plan to upgrade the library. The plan includes expanding the space by 1,500 feet, a new roof with exposed ceiling, office space, up-to-date ADA code bathrooms, technology area, and multi-use room for computer classes, group meetings, and trainings. Estimated cost for this project is just over $1 million, and the library is able to contribute existing donation funds to kick off the fundraising campaign, the release stated. We are relying on community support to complete this long overdue project. It's time to restore North Branch Library's legacy to uplift the individuals it serves. People can donate to the renovations at saaf.org. San Angelo police arrest teen driver charged in hit and run of officer's vehicle. By John Tufts, published April 16th. Police arrested a 17-year-old San Angelo driver early Friday on multiple charges after his vehicle struck an unoccupied police car, according to a news release. At around 12:20 a.m., Friday, April 16th, two San Angelo police officers were investigating a crash in the 2100 block of North Bryant Boulevard when a 2000 Ford Red Focus collided with one of the officer's unoccupied patrol units. The driver of the vehicle fled the scene, and a short vehicle pursuit ensued throughout the adjacent neighborhood, a news release stated. Police said the Focus struck a curb during the chase, rendering the vehicle inoperable. The driver, later identified as Aaron Michael Martinez, 17, was taken into custody without further incident, according to the news release. Officers charged Martinez with duty on striking unattended vehicle, evading arrest detention with vehicle, driving under the influence, and possession of drug paraphernalia, a news release stated. As of noon Friday, Martinez remained in Tom Green County Jail in lieu of $10,186 bond, according to online jail records. One of three San Angelo men charged in 2019 kidnapping and burglary sentenced. By Elena Edgen, published April 15th. A San Angelo man pleaded on Thursday in a 2019 case involving a kidnapped woman being forced to assist in a home burglary. About 2:30 p.m. Thursday, April 15th, Christopher David McGallen, 27, attended a plea hearing via Zoom in the 51st District Court. McGallen was charged with burglary of a habitation and kidnapping. He pleaded guilty to the burglary charge, and the kidnapping charge was dismissed. 51st District Court Judge Carmen Dusek accepted the state's recommendation and sentenced to McGallen to 6 years in jail. He also has to pay $5,769.93 in restitution. October burglary kidnappings lead to multiple arrests. On October 12, 2019, police responded to a burglary in the 2800 block of Jomar Street. They found a vehicle with the stolen property inside, which included hand tools, a PlayStation, clothing, and jewelry. Three men and a woman were arrested. The woman told officers she had been kidnapped and forced to help the men with the robbery. She had been lured to an apartment in the 1900 block of Rainey Street, where she was held captive. The men blindfolded her, bound her with duct tape, took her to a different location, restrained her to a chair, hit her with a belt, and threatened her, records state. Once she agreed to help with the burglary, she was blindfolded again and taken to the Jamar Street residence. When they arrived, Joshua Felipe Gonzalez removed her blindfold and pointed an unidentified deadly weapon at her. McGowan and Luis Matthew Duron entered the residence and began removing property. After the burglary, she was blindfolded and taken to a home in the 1600 block of Evelyn Street, where she was restrained to a chair. Over the course of 6 hours, she was struck in the head with a deadly weapon and threatened with serious bodily injury or death. The men then released her for the sole purpose of taking the burglary charge, records state. She was originally arrested, but soon released and was not charged. Kidnapped teen escapes after 2 days of assault. The woman told police a 17-year-old boy was being held captive at a house on Evelyn Street. The boy had been there for a party on October 12th and held there for 2 days before he escaped, records state. During the October 12th party, the teen and Gonzalez had an altercation, which led to the teen getting hit with a weapon. The teen was brought into the home, where he was assaulted and threatened for 2 days. The teen was forced to contact his mother through Facebook Messenger to check in and avoid suspicion during this time. He was taken out of his restraints when people came over and told to act normal or else they would kill him, records state. On one of those times when people were over, the teen got a cell phone and asked his mother to pick him up. His family arrived at the home and were told by an unidentified man the teen was not there. The teen then burst out of the front door without shoes and got into the car. He had bruises all over his body, swelling on the left side of his head, burn marks on his arm, and rope burns on his wrists, records state. Duran and Gonzalez were charged and indicted in the teen's kidnapping. McGowan was not charged in connection to this case. And finally, here is our weekly column by Allison Watkins. Not all insects are a nuisance in the garden. Published April 22nd. The recent cold front put a brief pause on spring activity in the garden and landscape, but a quick return to warm weather will have everything buzzing and growing again. Gardening is focused on the plants, but there are so many other living things involved. Microbes in the soil, providing nutrients to plants, beneficial insects pollinating flowers and keeping pest populations down, earthworms aerating soil, and more. It is a very fine balance, and it is important to remember to let nature help as much as possible. While some insects feed on plants and cause damage, many more are harmless or even beneficial. Predators, parasitoids, and pollinators are all necessary for a successful landscape or garden. Predators are insects that hunt and kill other insects. Some are broad feeders and eat many different insects, and some are more specialized, such as ladybirds and green lacewings that prefer to feed on aphids. Since aphids are plant pests, ladybugs and lacewings are very desirable in the yard. Parasitoids are insects that live in or on another insect and eventually kill them. One example is the bracnid wasp that lays eggs on tomato hornworms. When they hatch, the larvae kill the hornworm. Tomato hornworms feed on and damage tomato plants, so anything that helps keep them under control is a friend to vegetable gardeners. Many fruit and vegetable crops need pollinators to produce fruit. Squash, melons, apples, cucumbers, etc. require insect pollination, most of which is done by bees. Butterflies, moths, flies, beetles, and more also contribute. To keep predators, parasitoids, and pollinators hard at work in your yard, be mindful of them. Try to encourage their populations and be careful not to kill them. Pesticides can be useful when used correctly, but always follow the label and limit the use of broad-spectrum insecticides. Beneficial insects tend to be more sensitive to them. Overusing pesticides often makes pest pot problems worse, increasing the quantity and variety of detrimental insects in the yard. This happens when the beneficial insect populations are reduced. For info on controlling pests in the yard or garden without damaging beneficials, visit the website https://landscapeipm.tamu.edu. To help pollinators, plant bee and butterfly-friendly flowers to provide food and nectar. Some pollinators utilize a wide variety of plants, while others require specific host plants. For example, planting milkweed in the yard is a big help for monarchs as they migrate north this spring. Swallowtail caterpillars like plants in the carrot family, like dill, fennel, and parsley. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.